BBC News.
Presented this evening by Lisa Costello. Why do many men seem lonely but are reluctant to do anything about it? That's the question being posed at Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club. We're heading there in a moment.
On BBC iPlayer.
12 months ago, a bloke breaks down, never seen again. 4 months ago, a woman just vanishes into thin air.
You don't know what's happening here.
A strange crime mystery in the Australian Alps.
People keep telling me how easy it is to disappear up here.
More people are missing. I think it's this town's karma.
I've seen things that I can't explain. They're warnings.
High country.
Hey! Hey, who's out there?
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Now we head up to Leeds for our stand-up series about modern masculinity. This week, a look at friendship.
Hello, Jeff Norcott here. This programme is my Working Men's Club. It's a kind of safe space to talk about the issues facing modern men. Just to let you know, this is a metaphorical rather than actual Working Men's Club, though it does have a snooker table, stale peanuts, and a bathroom containing the most optimistic condom machine of all time. Just to let you know, we will be talking in-depth about male feelings, which might be uncomfortable for some of you. So if you do need to take a moment to calm down, I've created a safe space at the back of the room. In there, you can look at pictures of Jude Bellingham holding a puppy. Or a different player if he missed a penalty before this goes out. If things do get a bit heavy, we can also default to what I call manly hypotheticals, OK? Just those little things that blokes do, those little discussion points that can break the tension. So here's the first one for you. If you always started on the green, could you beat Tiger Woods over 9 holes? Do we have any takers for this? Yeah. Right, OK, we've got somebody near the front there that believes that they could beat Tiger Woods. How are you going to do that?
Easy, he's rubbish.
Oh, he's rubbish! Yeah, I should have said Tiger Woods in his pomp. I'll be honest, mate, Tiger Woods, 82 years old, I think he's still going to be better at golf than you, unless you're some retired pro.
No, he can't putt.
He can't putt.
I told you don't agree.
That just sounds so much better in your accent. So you're probably Tiger Woods, you can't putt. This is a show which tries to unpack how it feels to be a man while trying to stay on the right side of blokiness. Take me, for example. Hopefully, I straddle that line. Now, I didn't cry at that bit in Toy Story 3, but Jeremy Clarkson holding a dead piglet on that farm show. I was sobbing like I was on my first day working at the Onion Factory. Can I just clarify, I do believe in the importance of men crying. I just believe that it should be done alone, all right? I've actually cried a lot since I've hit 40, right? Don't laugh at that. Look, we let women in and this is what happened. I nearly went very Yorkshire then. You let women in, right? And they start laughing at your misfortune. I've cried a lot, mainly in travel lodges all around the UK, I would say. So, I'd actually say that during middle age, crying has replaced masturbation as the thing I need to do in order to sleep. You know, there are still tissues by the bed, but the reasons are much sadder. Now, we want the show to feel like an actual Working Men's Club. However, women are allowed in because hashtag lawyers. We're coming to you from Yorkshire, a humble county, which thinks that it won the Olympics and invented tea.
We did.
All right, well, right, any other stuff that you should be credited for?
Humility.
Yorkshire puddings.
Yorkshire puddings, yeah.
Abolition of slavery.
Abolition of slavery. Wow, that was an escalation from pudding. There was no middle ground there whatsoever. Pudding, abolition of slavery. I was going to say, can anyone top that? But I really don't think you can. Despite being up north, Leeds is actually close to the centre of the UK, which was useful getting it commissioned, I won't lie. But little word to the wise, don't ask the locals what it's like living in the Midlands. Mm. They don't like it, because this isn't Sheffield, right? I love the way, by the way, the tourist board here, they sell the city as having a thriving art scene, rich sporting heritage and pulsating nightlife. All summed up by getting pissed watching Leeds lose in the Wetherspoons that used to be a theatre. Good to see you moving on from the playoff. Anyway, don't mention it, Jeff. at the end of the show, like any self-respecting man, we're going to be offering structured advice that wasn't asked for. That's what we do as men, isn't it? Right, ladies? We're going to offer it to a minister for men, should that position ever come into existence. Tonight, we're going to be talking about friendship, and even saying that makes me feel a bit uncomfortable. I actually felt it in the room there, it's gone weird. Have you ever noticed how women tend not to use the words men use for their friends, right? Like mates, we use words like mates, don't we, AJ? But ladies tend to go for more intimate terms like bestie, BFF. They even call them their girlfriends. However, blokes go for words like chum, mate and buddy, which all sound like premium dog food. A little caveat, a lot of the male friendships I'm going to be describing might sound old-fashioned, but the shift between generations of men isn't quite as swift as you'd think. Just because the Gen Z lads moisturise, hydrate and spend half their time at the gym together, it doesn't mean that they've completely cracked the code of male relationships. Just as we're encouraging them to be more empathetic on one hand, we've also seen the rise of the sometimes toxic manosphere on the other. For every Andrew Garfield, there's an Andrew Tate. For every joe.co.uk, there's a Joe Rogan. Though I suspect, thankfully, that Gen Z will never have their own Wayne Lineker. When it comes to male friendships, even the way we greet each other is fundamentally different to women. Women tend to be more tactile, often greeting with hugs and kisses. Now, I know we're in Leeds, so this might weight the sample, but a quick question. How many men here tonight would kiss a man on the cheek as a formal greeting? By way of a cheer?
Me!
Nice. This guy down the front, are you willing to have a...
Yeah, go on.
Yeah? Come. All right. Come and kiss me. Hey. Wow. Well, right, I need to unpack that a bit for the listener. If you wondered why there was a sudden spike in the cheering there, it's because me and my friend here.
Each other on the lips.
We did. What's your name, mate?
Andy.
So yeah, me and Andy, we both went our head, we put our heads left, then right, and then we kissed each other on the lips. Very gentle, actually. Very gentle kiss. British males may well be the world's worst in terms of tactility, though not Andy. But even in cultures generally seen as more culturally regressive than ours, they have men openly embracing a lot more than we do. Spanish men greet each other for lunch with more physical warmth than most British men greet their mates after the birth of a first child. Looks can be deceiving, though. If you go to a Spanish city on a Saturday night, you'll see gangs of local men, arm in arm, going from bar to bar, sipping beer sensibly and nibbling squid. All very calm, no trouble. Then the next morning, those same men will go arm in arm to a church and throw a donkey off a roof. Google it. Not only do British blokes tend to be physically distant, our friendships are underscored by a culture of playful meanness, right? When women go out on a hen do, they'll often canvass the bride as to what activities she might enjoy. Men will ask that question, then go, nah, we're handcuffing you to an Oompa Loompa. Now, that might sound like I'm being politically incorrect for shock value, but in 2007, I did a gig in Cardiff, and one of the stags was tethered to a 3'4" fella dressed like he worked for Willy Wonka. Being comedians, right, we didn't wonder too much about the ethics. We just wanted to know how much the Oompa Loompa was getting paid. Double what we were on. Even the beginning of a stag do is underscored by this weird kind of hostility, right? When you arrive at the pub on a Friday, you go to the first pub, the stag goes to the toilet, and it all starts, doesn't it? It's like, has he gone? Has he gone? Right, let's destroy him. You're like, why? Well, because he's getting married. You're like, but we're all married. Doesn't matter. He's out of order, all right? So, should we tie him up? Yeah, let's tie him up. Good idea, like it. Yeah, should we strip him? Yeah, let's strip him, yeah. Should we cut him? No, Dave. There's always one bloke that wants to take it a little bit too far, isn't there? Now, do we have any legally admissible stories of stag do banter which got out of hand? Any hands up that you're willing to share?
It was a stag night, and basically we got someone drunk, and we stripped him, and we cable tied him onto a train going to York.
You know when I said it had to be legally admissible? I mean, I don't know what's the worst thing about that, being naked, being cable-tied, or ended up in York.
And the best part was, it wasn't even a stag night.
Yeah, it gets harder to explain to the police there. Thank you very much for that. We've got the guy at the front. Are you still up for sharing?
I'm on a stag dude that's going on a stag next week.
Okay, right.
I'm in my 40s. Mm-hmm. They're all in their late 20s. send out a picture of a T-shirt that I'm due to wear.
Yeah.
And I then send that WhatsApp onto one of the friends in the group, thinking it's one of the friends in the group, saying, what the hell is this? Obviously, what the hell is this goes out to the whole group, to all the 20-year-olds. What do you mean we're wearing a T-shirt for the stag?
I see.
About?
Right, so it's a thing. It's that camaraderie. That you're. So what does it say on the T-shirt?
Craig Stag to Portugal 2024.
Rock and roll, man.
Parents. It's black and white, and it says parental advisory on it.
Rated 18. I think you're right to question that, because you look like the biggest bunch of bellends. parental advisory. You'll all be in bed by 11. Who are you kidding? And I've got to think, I think you're absolutely mental going out with a group of 20-year-olds. You really are, because they're boring. But at least stag do's tend to occur at a time in life when you can actually muster enough friends to throw you in a river. Sadly, the male friendship group tends to decline throughout middle age. 41% of British men say they have friends they like but don't bother to see. The shrinking circle of mates is made all the more galling by the fact that your partner's often still recruiting during this time. I decided to research this phenomenon. But as with so many issues around masculinity, there's not much info knocking about. In fact, when I Googled why do men have, the top answer to come up before I'd finished that sentence was nipples. So before we push on, a quick debate. Why do men have nipples?
Evolutionary hangover.
Oh, there you go. That's confidence. Did you hear that? And there is a very modest hand up near the front. Why do men have nipples?
I don't know, but he's got four.
I don't know, but he's got four. A lot of the dialogue seems to dive into the usual bunker of it's the way we socialise men, right? As though there's some manual that we could all read and then do a quick rewrite and it would all be fine. In one especially progressive article I found, they suggested that a gathering of three or more men should start with one guy taking the initiative by saying, and I quote, "So how's everyone doing at home?" I mean, that's a nice idea, that question, but you try that at a pub in Wakefield and you'll get thrown out like Jazzy Jeff in The Fresh Prince. Or they'll mistake the question about how things are going at home and answer, "Not bad, it's away from home that's problem. Only 3 points since Christmas and we haven't found a target man." One thing the article did get right was that men don't tend to seek emotional support from their friends, often preferring to get it instead from a female partner or relative. Now, this resonates with me, but it does mean there's a huge burden on women who are not only giving this support to the men in their lives, but often their children and every woman they know. When I was younger, the old stereotype persisted that the reason men had less friends was because their wives didn't approve of them, as though she'd come in like Brian Clough. As far as we're concerned, we're not going to Terry's second wedding because he got it by cheating. As though she'd make you get rid of all the ones with dodgy nicknames. And on that note, Lap Dance Liam and Porno Pete, I miss you, lads. I'm not sure women do that so much these days in terms of our friends. If we take the football analogy further, I think we as men, we're the managers, but we gradually let most of our mates go on a Bosman. You know? It's the friendship equivalent of farming them out on a free transfer at some obscure Danish club. Now, I'm guilty of this. I had a mate who was usher at my wedding 20 years ago, but he moved to Italy and over time we just lost touch. Why? Well, first up, it was always me driving the contact, right? I had several friends like this. I got fed up of being made to feel like baby reindeer without the free drinks. Secondly, my friend had the gall to go and live in another country, right? Now, I've had several friends move abroad, and I'm always extremely resentful when it happens. I mean, why would they live in places with sunshine and low crime rates when they could have counted on me for a couple of nights at Curry Club per annum, right? And thirdly, I think I just got a bit lost in work. Given that, like most men, I didn't take time out of the workplace to raise a child. When I got into my 30s, work became my best mate. Work was my new friend who gave me validation or took the piss out of me and, crucially, provided excuses to drink. OK, that got a bit real, so I think we need a... I think we need a manly hypothetical here. Would you rather play snooker against Luke Littler or darts against Ronnie O'Sullivan?
It's a real no-brainer, really.
Is it?
Yeah, well, Luke's too young to buy you a drink. He's... Ronnie will get his rounding.
Fair enough. Yeah, how old is he?
18.
17.
17. Look, people in the front going, that's more than old enough in Wakefield. All right, see, this is how these work. We were thinking about feelings, and then we weren't. All right, let's try and keep it a bit more positive. Most men do have some friends, but even the exchange of information between us when we have mates can be deeply unsatisfactory. Like, for example, I'll often spend 3 days away with the lads and return with no new information about their lives. I see a lot of women nodding, right? It's quite perplexing. I'll get back and my wife will go, "So, how was it?" I'll be like, "What have you heard?" First, you tell me your thing, I'll tell you my stuff. She's like, "No, how are your friends, Jeff?" I'm like, "Well, I think they're fine." She's like, "Oh my God, you just spent 3 days away with them. You know, Austin's got a new job. Jonesy's got a new kid on the way. Did you find out about any of that?" I'm like, just then, like when you said it. And she said, "Jesus Christ, Jeff. You know, it's sad. You've known these lads 30 years and you don't know a single thing about their lives." I was like, "You know, but you're right, it is sad. It's one of the great tragedies of being male is you never get to tell another man how you truly feel. But on the other hand, he never burdens you with his bullshit. So it's..." She said, "So what did you talk about?" I said, "Well, I guess we just tried to work out each other's fundamental flaws and weaknesses, and then we hammered those, right?" Like, for example, Greg turns up. He's already receding. He's got this weird fringe. We're not letting that go. Oh, no. We started doing this hand gesture to show his weird hair. We started calling him Wiggy Greg. Wiggy Greg. Wiggy Greg. We got it into a chant. Wiggy Greg. We even got the breakfast staff at the Ibis involved. It was very nice. So he went back up to his room. So we all went to the fancy dress shop and got Greg wigs, right? And so when he come back down, we're like, "This is what you look like." He went back to his room again, and this occasion he locked himself in the room, right? So I went up, some people, they're very sensitive, you know. And I went up there with another mate, and we listened close to the door, and I could hear the sound of a man weeping from within. So we recorded that sound, and we shared it with the lads that couldn't be there. So, you know, and said, "You know, babe, don't tell me we don't look out for each other." Now, we can laugh fondly at the surface level of men's friendships, but there are some benefits to the way we operate. The time we spend together is quite uncomplicated. We don't have to bolt on the old, "So, what's going on with you?" thing at the start, right? We can just head straight to pointing out who has the biggest spam. Spoiler alert, me. As Bob Mortimer once called it, a sniper's wet dream. I don't know Bob Mortimer, that's just a phrase he used. But anyway, it's not going in because it didn't get any laughs, so that's fine.
I don't know what spam is up here.
You don't know what spam is? Oh, forehead. I've got a massive forehead. Well, don't make that noise. That's worse. Well, of course you see, that's worse than you just laughing at me. I didn't even, at least with the joke, I'm taking ownership. You go, "Well, you know, I kind of pointed it out." And now you're like, "Oh, it's really big. It's just really..." I mean, it's not like he's going bald, but it's also just really big. It's just weird. And his ears are big. However, if you don't keep up with each other's lives at all, it can leave your friends adrift and vulnerable. You don't want to be finding out your mate's third wife left him when you're not really sure what happened to the second. It might be helpful if friends came with an inbuilt previously on Days Live. He'd taken up fishing because of that show with Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer. Meanwhile, his son is now 4 inches taller than him and has started calling the shots with the TV remote, which has mysteriously coincided with Dave experiencing erectile dysfunction. There's no doubt some of our disinterest in each other's lives is due to laziness, but there's another issue, which is the fear of seeming nosy. Yes, my wife inquires after other people's lives because she's a caring empath who genuinely wants to help, but she also kind of likes knowing that stuff too, right? You know, and I like knowing it because the great thing about being married to a woman is you get all of the gossip with none of the effort. Though you can end up with more opinions about your wife's friends than your own, right? You're like, "Oh, babe, Christine needs to leave him. That's classic Christine, that is. She's afraid to be loved. And Christine always looks fantastic in swimwear." Maybe not the last one. Right, we're going to do a quick test here about how much we know about each other's lives. Give me a cheer if you've got a mate with more than one kid. Three. Give me a cheer if you know what the second one's name is. Three. Okay, caught you doing that. Okay, right. Greg. What is Craig?
Greg.
Okay, for elite level, boss level points.
Okay.
3 children. Any mates with 3 children? Okay, there we go. It's difficult, isn't it? Yes. Men often don't know the names of all their mates' children. They don't, right? Especially when you go beyond 2. I mean, look, if you're foolish enough to have more than 2, don't go asking me to go only connect and remember all of that, even if I can somehow recall every England wicketkeeper since Jack Russell. It's inexcusable to not know the basics of each other's lives, but the intimate stuff, a lot of blokes will worry that that might seem nosy. Even a recently single friend going on his first date with a new lady might not get asked that many questions by his mates. My wife will be perplexed I'm not all over him for detail, but in my mind, it's already a stressful endeavour, and the last thing he needs is somebody else drilling him for info. You're like, what are you going to wear? Where are you going for dinner? What's it like getting an erection with someone you've met since the Blair years? And the problem is with shared information is you might realise other people are having a much better life than you. Right? If we all speak about our sex lives, we might work out we're the ones getting it least. And that once a quarter should only apply to VAT returns. It's easier to think your life's going okay if you don't have anything to compare it to, right? This is why women instigate a lot more divorces, because they're armed with more data and comparative stats. What if men started sharing info at the same level? There might be more to live up to, ladies, you know? What, she just made you a sandwich? You have no idea. Once you get beyond a certain age, that is the fantasy. People say, what are you into? I like just being made a sandwich and just like nothing else being said. I don't mean that I don't want her to talk. I mean, it's not rationalised. It's just, oh look, there's a sandwich. Perhaps the sparse detail also comes from how blokes spend time together, right? Our time together is organised differently. It's often centred around sport or engaged in an actual activity. My wife often says, why don't you go for coffee? And I have to point out to her that coffee is a noun, not a verb, right? It's not steeped in manly traditions. You've never seen loads of blokes spray each other with Americano when England score. Right? We need to be doing stuff. In the last 6 months, social time with my mates has been spent going to the football, going to the cricket, going clubbing, going to a place called Flight Club, right? Now, if you don't know about it, have you heard of this?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a pub where you play darts and they do TV clips and it looks like darts on telly. The first rule of Flight Club is don't tell your wife how much it costs to go to Flight Club. We also went to an indoor cricket venue where lots of mainly drunk men in suits stagger into a virtual indoor cricket arena trying to hit sixes. While my wife is sharing actual information with her friends, I'm trash-talking an AI Nathan Lyons. So who's the real loser? The best moment of that night and every night together are each other's failings and moments of personal shame, right? Now, I'm not talking about his whole life going wrong, but just those little bits of humiliation, small humiliations we can all enjoy. Now, one of my mates was batting, and he was batting really well, so we didn't like that, so we decided to turn up the speed of the bowling without him knowing, right? He just gradually cranked it up and cranked up till it was going genuinely quite quick and it hit him in the plums, right? Hit him in the nuts. But the thing was, it was just one of those grazing contacts, so he had that moment of false hope where he thought it was going to be okay. And that made it so much better for us. I got to say, broadly speaking, women aren't like this. If women played tennis together, they wouldn't be pissing themselves because Becky took a volley to the tip, would they? But maybe there's a dark tale to all this schadenfreude. I wonder if the reason we don't ask blokes how they're doing during the tough times is because we've all happily laughed at each other's low-level misfortune over the years. It's plausible to worry the lads might laugh at you living in a bedsit because you can remember the time Jimmy shat himself in public and got banned from Cineworld. This is where I find the discourse difficult. I don't want my male friends to think for one second that I take any pleasure in their life becoming difficult. However, I also don't want to stop laughing when a friend takes one straight in the balls. It's tricky. Maybe we should just be direct when our friend endures one of those light-hearted moments of public humiliation. Dave, I ain't gonna lie, it was me who laughed when you came back from the toilet and didn't realise you had piss stains on your shorts. And spoke to that woman who kept looking at your shorts. That was me. I was laughing, but it was also me who sent you that moon pig card when you got the tumour, so... that's good friendship. Among my friends, WhatsApp has been a useful bit of technology in creating closer bonds. There's something about the rolling nature of a lad's WhatsApp group which feels similar to a pub. The lack of the all-too-vivid scrutiny of actually facing another human has led to us sharing stuff we might not have shared in person. Stuff about how proud we are of our kids, our parents being ill, personal losses, the breakdown of a relationship. The only problem with these kind of posts is one of the other lads might have already been in the process of composing a jokey message when the serious one went up, right? So the words, lads, I'm afraid to say it is cancer, can be followed by an AI image of Gareth Southgate fighting an Ewok. Now, at this point, I was going to say, any examples of WhatsApp mishaps?
I'm a hairdresser, and I was doing a lady's hair for her 90th birthday. Mm-hmm. Took a photo when it was done, sent it to her daughter, and I wrote selfie, but it auto-corrected to selfish. And I didn't realise.
Oh, my and God.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny about that is because when you said that she was 90, I was like, does she need to be getting her hair done? And now, you didn't mean that, but that's the only possible inference that lady could have taken. Okay, one of the ladies has shared. Come on, lads. Right, we got the men need to disclose now. We have any WhatsApp mishaps from the men? What was your WhatsApp mishap?
Well, it's pathetic compared to that, but I've got a football group that I'm a WhatsApp member of, and I stupidly sent the message to the wife in the morning to the whole football group.
Oh, what did it say?
Just the normal. I love you and stuff like that. Pathetic.
Oh, I mean, do you know what? As a moment in time, that could have actually provoked, like, a sharing within the group. What if you'd have logged back in, though, going, I'm glad someone finally said it, man. We need to validate each other more. I'll just say, lads, I can't put into words how much I respect you as a group. And then you come back in and go, oh, sorry, that was meant for the wife. And they're like, yeah, yeah, we knew that. Of course you knew that. So being a blokey show, we don't want to just talk about problems, but offer up practical solutions, even though no one asked. So as an audition to be made minister for men, I recommend the following to enhance the quality of male friendships. As an idea to update your friends on the personal stuff, maybe use headline news about your life at the beginning of a social gathering. Today's top headlines. Bong. She still thinks I had an affair. Bong. I don't have that much energy. Bong. We've decided we're doing Christmas at the in-laws, even though it's only May. Bong. My teenager is no longer a they-them, but has become a communist. More news as it comes in. Also, make knowing stuff about your friends like trivia. Award points for the tricky stuff, right? You know their middle name? 5 points. You know the name of their third kid? 12 points. You manage to remember that they have siblings? Retire the trophy. We just don't know. We just don't know. Your friends, your friends got siblings? Your best mate, so your best mate are the kids, right? Yeah. Okay, does he have siblings?
Yes.
What has he got?
I know he's got one brother.
Right, there you go. I know he's got one brother. Practice sympathetic phrases in front of the mirror before you go and meet the lads. Stuff like, that must have been really hard for you. And I can't imagine what you were feeling. But it was really funny when you got hit in the nuts at cricket. Experiment with some of the validating phrases women use to bolster each other's confidence. Try, she's lucky to have you, instead of, I think she's only sleeping with you for a bet. And you're a great father, instead of unflattering comparisons with Joseph Fritzl. And if your mate has lost some weight, try saying, you look good, bruv, rather than asking if he's contracted some kind of tropical wasting disease. Okay, that is time. Take your glasses to the bar. This has been Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club. Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club was written and performed by Jeff Norcott. The producer was Ed Morrish, and it was a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Chris Reed, Matt Pryor, Alex Stewart, Olivia. Oh, sorry, that's my mate's kid's name.
And in next week's programme, Jeff considers how men deal with pregnancy, presumably another person's.
I'm John Holmes, writer, broadcaster and man, and last year I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Following surgery, I'm recovering just fine now, thanks for asking, but it's all been a bit weird. And I think it feels weird, not least because men don't really like talking about this stuff. So, in John Holmes Says the C Word, I've gathered together a load of men who are all members of the club that no one wants to be part of, and we're going to talk about cancer in all of its brutal, difficult, ridiculous and funny detail.
Oh, it's good to laugh, John, isn't it?
So join me, Stephen Fry, Jeremy Bowen, Eric Idle and many more as